I didn't turn it around fast enough. Linoleum knife.
Podcast of the cinema.
We're so lo-fi that if I'm not super on the ball and don't spin this microphone back around after pointing it at the boombox that plays our theme music, then the, what just happened?
Well, then be super on the ball.
Happens. Well, I, you know what? I'm distracted.
There's a lot happening.
There's a lot going on today. All right. We have a guest. I'm always trying to impress the guests.
Well, and you're doing a bang-up job so far. Well. All right. So you're Dave White. I'm Alonzo Duraldi.
Yes.
We are film critics.
Yes.
We're married to each other.
Yes.
This is our show.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And if, joining us today, as you know from having read the title of the show, I don't know why people always act like this is a big reveal. Louis Vertel is here. We're so delighted. Welcome.
I love the podcast. I love Dave. I love Alonzo. I think I always say this every time I come on, but they always sit me in a chair cruelly where I am looking at their beautiful books, like that Marie Kondo style I would actually own and keep. And so today, the names I'm seeing are Diana Vreeland. I've already had several thoughts about her. The Madeleine Kahn biography, which I have and haven't read yet.
Good stuff.
Yes, lots of fun stuff over there.
Louis, of course, co-host of the Keep It podcast, and just fresh from his whirlwind triumph on the red carpet at the 91st Annual Academy Awards.
At the 2018 Olympics. Yes. No, yes. At the Oscars, yes.
Well, you were carrying a torch. This was very exciting because when I heard that you got the gig, that you were doing, you were basically manning the Academy's Twitter feed. Is that how that was?
Yeah, going? I was hosting their red carpet interview session basically before the Oscars, and it I think last year it was on Facebook, and this year they broadcast it on Twitter, which is where people are actually actively discussing
right.
the Oscars.
I don't know. It was just one of those moments of like, you know, there's some sports metaphor here of like, you know, the kid who played at the country club with a broken racket who is now like, you know, winning Wimbledon. It's like, of course, yes, this is like Lewis's moment. It's all led up to this because nobody knows Oscar stuff in my life the way you know it.
Oh,
so.
Well, thank you. I mean, to this day, even now, I really don't know who at the Oscars decided, oh, it has to be this person. Like, I still haven't met whoever that magical person was, but no, it was very exciting. I mean, it was the one time I got to be on camera and just recall trivia for everybody and for the celebrities themselves and be like, Glenn was first nominated 36 years ago for The World According to Garp, and I feel really smug about it.
Well, look, you know, you famously remembered all of Meryl Streep's nominations when even Meryl didn't.
So, correct, yes.
You know, you got to come correct with these people. So Glenn Close and Bradley Cooper, were totally, like, getting all the big names. What is that day like? Like, how early did you have to be there?
I was shocked. Okay, I live down the street. I live in West Hollywood. And it takes about 10 minutes to get there, but they picked me up at 9 in the morning.
Whoa.
So I was there all day, being shoehorned into a plum tuxedo.
I got to say something about that
tuxedo,
Ferragamo, beautiful thing. You look like the most elegant carving knife.
Thank you. A scimitar?
That. Yes. Yeah. It was, I looked at you and I was like, holy cow.
Look at him.
Look at how good he looks today.
I was reminded of the Paul Rudnick description of someone looking like a well-dressed exclamation point.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much. Definitely hit shift and a number on a keyboard for me, please. A friend of mine had a bunch of suits available, and I was like, I will take the one that makes me look like the most foppish Clue character. And here we are.
And so, what's the mood? Did you talk to anybody that felt resigned to the fact that they were not winning and they were just going to soak up all the pre-show because that was all they had?
Yes, specifically a legend named Diane Warren.
Oh.
Right. So Diane Warren nominated for the 10th time for her song from RBG.
Right. The Susan Lucci of the Oscars.
Correct. As she herself pointed out on the feed. She goes, oh my God, I'm becoming the Susan Lucci of the Oscars. How many times did she lose? And I was like, you know what? 19. Like, I had that on top. And but she was very cool about it. And someone like her was just very appreciative of the fact that anyone knew any sort of deep knowledge about her. I said, you know what song is good? That one you wrote for Pearl Harbor, There You'll Be. She goes, that is one of my favorites. Thank you.
Nice.
Yeah. But no, so she was particularly resigned to losing and cool with it because she was up against Lady Gaga, who she had previously been nominated with.
Oh, that's right. For the
Till It Happens to You.
Yes. The Invisible War.
Yes. So she was rad as hell. Honestly, but Bradley Cooper, who I had no read on personality-wise, was very game and like, Rad and laughed seemingly genuinely at our jokes.
Always a plus.
Shocking.
It's like, yeah, you're an actor. Do some acting and pretend like you're having fun here.
Right. Also, it's just, I mean, I come from a world of like entertainment journalism where you're thrown on a random red carpet for random PR events and it's just frantic and you're collecting celebrities and like they don't want to talk to you or they're only available for one question and several people get to ask that question. This time, because I had my own little kiosk where people were filtered in, it just was the first time ever on a red carpet I felt like I was in a controlled environment.
Well, yeah, and you're, you know, you were there on behalf of the Academy. It's not like you're there for, no shade, but reels or something,
yes,
you know,
yeah,
where you're
right.
just kind of thrown into the fish tank.
Which
and,
of our friends did you just insult?
I don't think anybody's there anymore. Okay. I think we knew people that used to be there.
All right.
But that's even generous. I mean, like, hot movie buzz is something you'd have to work for. You know,
right,
just random
exactly.
nonsense.
Yes, yes, yeah. yes. So, I mean, did it – that I guess this is as close as you've ever gotten to the big show, right? I mean
– Yes. And also, by the way, as close as I want to get. I was thinking, you know, I was actually stressed about the fact that, you know, I started at 3:30 and then I was done right as the show started. And then I really wanted to race home to watch it. I wanted to not watch it there. I don't know if you've ever been to an award show.
No.
I was at the Emmys one year. Mm. Not fun. I mean, the commercials, I mean, the whole, everyone just shuts down. Like, it's not like people are sitting around, like, you know, clinking glasses. They're just bored.
Right.
You know, so I didn't need to be a part of that. I wanted to be around people, you know, screaming Glenn Close's credits.
and did you get to?
I sure did. I found my friend Jordan's house, and there were people there, you know, all dressed as various characters from Dangerous Liaisons, as I requested.
So, you know, we're inevitably disappointed by the Academy's choices, but although they had a couple of good ones this year, what was your takeaway?
Well, I have to be honest, I didn't think it was going to happen for Green Book. I was like, Roma, we all agree we really liked it, right?
Yeah.
No reason to vote against
right.
it. I've said before, what shocks me is, even if I don't like the Best Picture, you can usually say it has universal acclaim. Mm. And Green Book has something like a 68 on Metacritic.
Right.
So
right.
it just, it feels like an invisible hand is guided that arc, that victory arc. A little strange for me.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of feeling the same way about it. But then about in the back of my mind, there was this nagging voice of like, Roma is a black and white film in another language, and it's from Netflix, which all the studios are terrified of.
Right, yeah.
You know, which is now we're seeing this week with Steven Spielberg trying to get the Academy rules changed so that Netflix gets screwed, and I'm very annoyed
about
that.
As he then mentions that he saw Green Book 5 times.
Yes! And
right.
like, that's...
Now, does he know that life is too short? Because what's going on?
Yeah, I don't know what buttons he got pressed watching that film, but that's such a weird thing. It's like, it's one thing to sort of nominally come out and favor something or like, you know, throw a reception on its behalf or whatever, but yeah, to literally sit and watch it 5 times? Come on.
It's the guilt trip for your uncle as opposed to your aunt. Yes. Nothing wrong with the guilt trip, by the way.
Oh, we're fans.
Actually, I really am. The thing about it winning is that when it happened, I thought, oh, okay, I get to go to bed now.
Yeah.
Like, uh-huh. I don't invest anything in it. You know, like, I watch it for the outfits, and I watch it to see that rare moment when someone really cool gets
totally.
Something, you know? But yeah, I just, when it won, I thought, okay, sure. That's what happens. They give awards to movies that don't deserve it.
Yeah. I mean, 2 years ago,
20 years from now, we're going to talk about Roma.
Yeah.
And 20 years from now, we're going to talk about, oh, that one? Best Picture? Really?
Yeah.
Why did that happen?
It's going to go on the greatest story ever told. The greatest show on earth list.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. You know, 2 years ago, Moonlight won, which is the only time I think in my adult life that my favorite film of the year has won Best Picture. But I very quickly resigned myself to that also maybe being the last time that ever happens.
So. Right. No, I mean, I kept thinking about that win because it just felt like, all right, we're all on the same page. This is a new, cool thing we all like. And then it turns out people were resentful about having to vote for that, it feels like.
I guess, yeah. Like, this is the kind of black movie we really want, you know? And I'm surprised that more people aren't connecting the dots of Green Book versus If Beale Street Could Talk, in terms of like, this is a narrative about racism in America that white people do not feel comfortable with, and nor are they meant to, Beale Street, versus the one that is the phony, like, storybook version that is designed to accommodate to them and make them feel comfortable with this stuff. So, anyway, it's over now.
We never have to talk about this movie again.
No, no.
That's exciting to me. That's what I'm stoked for.
Yeah, I would just assume we never do. All right, well, let's talk about Greta.
Ooh. Well, hang on now.
Oh, sorry.
Hang on now.
Sorry.
I have to talk about my favorite things of the Academy Award.
Oh.
Where's my little note?
You kept notes. Good for you.
I did. Here's what I liked about the Academy Awards. I like Lady Gaga's corny sincerity.
Oh, sure.
It might even be fake, but if it is, she's an even better actress than we thought she was.
I would call her the Uber Hathaway. Yes.
I agree with that.
Whom I also adore. Yes.
I adore her as well. And the watching her emote over literally anything in the world, and she will, it makes me happy. For a long time, I was sort of on the fence about, do I care about this person as an artist? Like, do I care about this music? You know, for a long time, I just thought, okay, I like Bad Romance. Sure. I can pretty much take or leave anything else that has come out of her musical output. But just now as a person in the culture.
As a personality,
watching her do everything that night, even that intricately choreographed number with Bradley Cooper.
Which was great.
That seemed to end on, like, the silhouette of Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga reminds me of, what album cover is that? It's like Barbara Streisand and like Chris Christopherson. That's what it is.
Yeah, so, but like, and you could feel the show just lovingly film it all. Mm. You know, like, suddenly the camera was moving more slowly and gently and everything was sort of enveloping them. The whole room was, I felt very tingly watching it. I don't think they're dating.
There was an undercurrent of, oh, you, there was,
the people in the world, straight people have a problem. And it starts when they take a four-year-old of one gender and pair them with a four-year-old of another gender because they play together on the playground. And they yell, is that your girlfriend? Like, that's a weird thing that they do.
Toxic heteronormativity.
They do that to people, and they still do it to you even when you're an adult. And so, it's weird.
I was thinking about how, even though, she's had albums, I guess I don't care about, for the most part, if we didn't have her this past decade, pop would be considerably more boring. I mean, just even in terms of, like, whatever.
Yes.
You're fed up with her, you're obsessed with her, there's at least some take on her that feels relevant or fun. And I can't say I feel that way about most pop stars in an age where just, I mean, now I sound like Paul Schrader or something talking about this, but just like, people are just good at savvily being boring, you know?
Right.
Yeah. How much Lana Del Rey can you take? You
right.
And then Jose Andres came out on stage.
He and Diego Luna need a rom-com.
Oh, I met Diego Luna on the red carpet, and I said, congratulations for lighting up this room with your eyes. I was just, you're blinded by him when you stand by him.
I will push him out of the way to get next to Jose Andres, who is my boyfriend.
Oh.
Yes. That he's just like the best Spanish daddy in the world. And he could host a show.
I look forward to that ranker.com tally. Could,
yeah.
He is busy feeding Puerto Rico.
I know. He's out in the world doing good. And which, come on, that makes him even sexier.
Well, sure.
So. And then I didn't like anything else. That's all.
I loved Olivia Coleman's speech.
I loved the two women
from Black Panther winning, and they both had those moments that were great. Yeah. Like, there were so many things, so many stops along the way where even like I didn't see Skin, and I've heard it's a sort of problematic win.
Yeah, I would say it's very problematic.
Yes, but based on people saying it. But I have to say, like, the sheer mouth agape joy of those filmmakers winning it was like, yeah, this is why you don't relegate this this category to the commercials, because like there's a lot of excitement here, you know. So yeah, I'm glad that all the bad ideas the Academy floated wound up getting shot down. As a show, I thought it worked pretty well.
It did. I have to say, I was actually almost embarrassed how much their changes worked.
Yeah.
Not that I thought they were all disastrous necessarily coming in, but just for instance, I have never really cared about the host. I always say it's like who sings right. the national anthem at the Super Bowl. Sure. I don't really remember it. Somebody's got to do it, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it spared us the sort of shticky sketch stuff they would have written for Kevin Hart or whoever right. in advance. And so, yeah, no, I think, yeah, don't need that. And also, like, don't need a million clip packages about, like, the history of the Western or whatever.
I have to say, I didn't know that was true. I didn't know until I saw this year's Oscars that I didn't need to see whatever. Yeah, clips like, of Stagecoach.
Yeah, because believe me, I love old movies. I'm totally a TCM fanatic. But, you know, when you watch, my joke is always when you watch the Grammys, they don't stop and tell you what jazz is. You
yeah.
know?
Uh-huh.
So, like, I don't think the Oscars have to do that, especially when, if the idea is let's celebrate the year just passed, then what they did on this show pretty much was celebrate the year just passed. Like they, you know, they had nice clip packages for all the Best Picture nominees. They had different things that were relevant to what was, you know, of course they screwed up the In Memoriam package the way they always do, left out Carol Channing and Sandra Locke. But,
and
you know,
they also left out Jonas Mekas.
Yes.
There would be no American avant-garde without him. And it has been requested by friend and listener, Nayland.
Yes.
Blake, for us to do a segment about him. We are going to do that. I have put the call out to another film critic who would be very helpful in that
yes.
regard. And I have not yet heard back from this person, but I'm sure I will. And so that is going to happen because if they leave him out, that means people in the world must not know him or care about who he is very
right.
much. And that bothers me. So we're
going
to talk
about
it.
He's a major figure.
Not today,
and
but soon.
While we're here, and I think Lewis can chime in on this, I would like to talk about Stanley Donen, who died the day before the Oscars and didn't make it into the In Memoriam reel, and he better be in 2020.
He's one of these like Victor Fleming type people where people don't know the name, but it's like, guess what he made?
Exactly. Yeah, you start listing these films like, yeah. Oh, him? He did all of those? Really? So, yeah. So, Stanley Donen, you know, was a dancer on Broadway, came to Hollywood, first as a choreographer and then as a director, did Anchors Away. That was when he first teamed up with Gene Kelly. The two of them would team up for three of the greatest American musicals ever made, On the Town, Singin' in the Rain, and It's Always Fair Weather. After the MGM musical period, he went to Europe and made extraordinary movies like Charade and Two for the Road and Arabesque and The Grass is Always Greener. You know, he did Bedazzled with Peter Cook and Dudley Moore.
Yep.
He may have done some of the worst films ever made by a great filmmaker.
Oh.
Like his last,
love that category.
His last film was Blame It on Rio, and before that he did Saturn III, which has a shocking like new era of fans. I was surprised to find
interesting.
Out. Like I made some joke about it on Facebook, and all these people were like, "No, what Saturn III? It's great." And Staircase, which is like one of the most crazily homophobic movies ever made.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know this one?
Oh, no, yeah.
Oh, Richard Burton and Rex Harrison.
Oh, I know exactly what it is.
Yeah,
yes, I didn't know it was called Staircase.
As an old gay couple who hate each other,
and
basically.
Like the voice that Richard Burton picked is unforgettable.
Yeah. Oh, it's crazy. And
also
spent,
unforgivable.
And he spends the entire movie in like sort of a turban or something.
It is maybe one of the most dismally depressing and misery-inducing films that I've ever seen in my life. And I've seen a lot of them.
Yeah, it makes the Turin Horse look like
No. Don't go to the Turin Horse. Do not invoke the name of the Turin Horse. That is a bleak film that is very good.
Okay.
It is not a film designed to make entire swaths of the human population feel like killing themselves, which is what Staircase is.
Is Charade the best non-Hitchcock movie of all time?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure some people would say Dressed to Kill.
Yeah.
But for me, yeah, as my tastes go, it's for sure Charade.
Yeah.
And I think, and Two for the Road, like we did an entire extra episode about, like, I just think it is one of the smartest movies about relationships and marriage. And, you know, I love looking at that movie. I love listening to that movie. The performances are extraordinary. It is a great film that has only about gotten half of its due, I think.
I was going to say, I was very heartened on Twitter to see so many people specifically reflecting on that movie. Like, it wasn't just a Singing in the Rain love fest. Sure. It was cool to see that.
Oh, and Funny Face, lest we forget. Another, you know, he did three really great Audrey Hepburn movies. I think he directed her more than anybody else, so I guess that means he directed her better than anybody else, but he did direct her to three of her greatest films. Anyway, just wanted to talk about that because I just have always been a huge fan of his. My first year at the USA Film Festival in Dallas, we did a tribute to him. I got to have breakfast with him and Leonard Maltin, and he told us a really salacious story that I will tell you guys off mic that I cannot tell here. but he was extraordinary. go see his movies. Maybe don't go see Blame It on Rio.
And never watch Staircase, just unless you're like,
for historical purposes only.
You're a cultural historian and you just need to see how bad the bad old days were.
Yeah.
There you go.
How bleak it all got.
I'm going to say, for Queer Cred and Richard Burton, there are other options. Like, just like Virginia Woolf alone, but wait, he is in Boom, right? Oh, Boom is what I'm talking about.
There we go.
Boom. Yeah. One of the most flabbergasting and wonderful films.
Coming out on Blu-ray in May. You'll ever see. I'm so excited.
More angry, glamorous people need to live on cliff tops.
And shout for injections.
Okay, so we have five movies.
Okay.
We have Fighting With My Family.
Yes.
We have Apollo 11.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Madea Funeral.
Mm-hmm.
What was it called?
What's a Madea Family Funeral.
A Madea Family Funeral.
I'm sure it's probably officially Tyler Perry's A Madea Family Funeral.
It is
funeral.
Officially Tyler Perry's.
Is it like a Michael Myers situation where you know she's not really dead? Like rises up, there's no body, etc.
I had great expectations going into this film as a Madea fan.
Sure.
Dave has a ranking list on the wrap right now of all the Madea films.
All the Madea films ranked, yes. The only things that I care to rank in public, Madea films. I'm so sad that the following did not happen in A Madea Family Funeral. I was hoping that Madea would be the person who died midway through the film, 50% of the movie. She's alive and making things wild. Then I wanted her to die. And then at the funeral, I wanted her to spring up out of the coffin, like post-dead, like zombie Madea or ghost or some combination of the two, and continue to wreak havoc in the lives of all the people.
Mm.
This did not happen. She does not die.
No, it's not her funeral.
It was a non-live spirit with
us. No. She does not die. And because you could have killed her and kept going. Ghost Madea could be its own franchise.
Oh, yeah.
Do the enjoy yourself, it's later than you think number from Everyone Says I Love You.
Yes.
I haven't thought about number in so long.
But instead, what you have is a, I guess we're just talking about it now, a soap opera. Very much like the haves and have-nots, Tyler Perry's TV soap opera. And as cheaply and terribly produced and made, everything about it.
Super flat. I made the joke in my review that it's the first feature film made in motion smoothing. Because it's so flatly lit.
It's very bad.
And
how
so,
it looks is ugly.
And so basically inept that you have like people are at a party at night and then immediately rush to the hospital minutes later, and the sun is shining.
Oh, God. Yeah. Stuff like that. The room.
Continuity.
Yeah.
Continuity ineptitude. And all the other ineptitudes that Tyler Perry just casually throws out at audiences willy-nilly. What's weird about him to me is that he seems to try to make films when he's making a serious film. And inevitably, he makes a serious film that is absolutely laughable.
Then Confessions of a Marriage Counselor.
He takes his talent as Madea, his greatest comic creation. He takes his talent and just
squanders
thinks
it.
It's not worth anything.
Mm.
And makes really badly produced Madea movies. And salvages them with his own, ad-libbed monologues and costumes, because he's not just Medea, he's Uncle Joe, and now he's
Uncle Heathrow,
and he's also himself as the son. So there will be scenes where he is four characters in one scene, and everyone is sitting around a room. No, there's literally no action taking place, but you're laughing because they're all saying really wrong-headed things to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all him. And there's no script. There's a bare bones of a plot line. But you know when he walks in that dress or as Uncle Joe or now as the uncle, what's it?
Heathrow.
With the
airport.
With the auto larynx.
With the electro larynx and and the amputated below the knee legs.
Yeah. They're saying hideous things to each other. And you know it's not right. But you're laughing. And that's always been the way it's been with this character.
He's a lot like Barbara Streisand that way, in that he has this comedic gift that he thinks is lesser than the other things that he brings to the world.
He wants to be taken seriously.
Yeah. It'd be like if Barbara Streisand had been contractually forced to play Judy Maxwell from What's Up, Doc? Over and over again.
Oh, wow.
Even though she's brilliant in that movie, she's never thought much of it.
Yes,
you know,
right,
because
right.
It wasn't nuts or whatever.
Want to compare them qualitatively.
No. I'm just saying.
Not?
Because Barbara Streisand in What's Up, Doc? Is
that's my favorite comedy performance of all time.
Legendary comedy performance.
But I'm just saying the idea of somebody who doesn't get their own worth of a thing,
Madea
or the worth of the thing they're doing,
and terrible, all wrapped up in one thing.
Yeah.
I don't want to. You know.
No. I don't want to
weigh them the same.
I'm making a broader.
It's like
case.
Ryan and Joe versus the volcano.
I understand where you're going with this. Yes.
Yeah.
I just wish that he cared more about making the Madea movies as rambunctious as his performance and as they used to be.
Sure.
The first two or three Madea movies, all the way up to Madea's Happy Family.
Yeah.
If Madea was the focus of the movie bounced off the walls. And you could tell that he decided to spend a little more money, you know, and exert a little more energy. But when the film around it is so listless and so just weak and tired and dull, the minute Medea's off screen...
Oh, yeah, you do not
and
care.
And it's the young people having their dramas about infidelity and this and that, you just think, where is Medea? Why can't Medea come back? What about the one with no legs? What's that character's name? Heathrow. Let's bring him back. Whatever it takes. Get someone who is Tyler Perry in a costume back in this movie quickly, or we're all going to leave.
There's one character who gets one dramatic monologue at the end of the film that's sort of like, oh, like, where's this been hiding for the last 2 hours? Like, this level of writing might have made this like a decent sort of, you know, domestic drama with these wacky Medea moments thrown in. But as it is, the second that she leaves the screen, you're just like...
I would read a book of poems, Dave, of yours, what you write when Medea's not on screen, waiting for Medea. What happened to Medea? Is she coming back?
I think she'll come.
My book of poems would not be as good as my book of poems by T-Boz called Thoughts.
Thoughts.
A book I own. It's on this beautiful shelf of books right behind you. T-Boz, I tell you, it's really not poems. They called it a book of poetry. She wrote lyrics.
Lyrics.
Yeah, it's
T-Boz is on a soap right now, isn't she?
Is she on a soap
right
now?
Yes, it's like, I can never keep them straight, unfortunately, but she is.
Wow. Speaking of poetry, there is I think it might be in the trailer, but there's a funny, like, Medea is sort of running the funeral, and part of the joke of the movie is that I guess black funerals take 9 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, she says,
Aretha Franklin's lasted all day.
Yeah. She gets up and says, I can't do her voice. Like, I will now read a poem by Maya Angelou.
Oh, my God.
And then she does this Maya Angelou impersonation. Like,
a rock, a river, a tree. Which is literally the opening line of On the Pulse of Morning.
Mm.
The
Bill Clinton poem.
The poem that Maya Angelou recited and wrote for the Bill Clinton inauguration, yes.
But like, Tyler Perry performing Medea is so funny and so spot on. Like, she's trying to comfort the widow. It's like, you know, and then the voice, I'm like, oh, it must be so terrible. And I know you feel bad now that he's, and then he'll just like drop a full resume, dead. and I would love for another director to come in and like write one of these movies.
Can you imagine if Paul Feig made a Medea
movie? Exactly.
Right.
That's totally who I was thinking
how,
of.
like
somebody who would let him improv when he needed to, but then make the rest of the movie interesting and actually make the movie not look like, you know, the picture that comes in the frame when you buy it at the store. But because Perry just doesn't. I mean, this is his 21st feature film, and he still is scene after scene of people sitting in a circle of sofas talking to each other.
Got it.
Like, there's eight of those scenes in this movie. It's crazy.
It kind of breaks my heart because I really. Oh, she's on Days of Our Lives now.
That's what I thought it was Days of Our Lives.
T-Boss is on Days of Our Lives.
Wow.
Not that I'm going to start watching it, but congratulations, T-Boss. A new career.
Good for her.
Yeah, what little plot there is about people having affairs. Someone dies. There's a big family funeral. They sit around. The end. Like, that's... And the movie just...
How very this is where I leave
the
you.
The movie just stops. Yes.
Ugh. Agonizing.
Is that the Jane Fonda one?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That was painful.
Remember that one?
Because it's where Jane Fonda washes a dish.
Jane Fonda tries to wash a dish? Oh, my God.
That was also a movie where Tina Fey was bad, and my brain hasn't recovered from that.
You know, I adore her TV work, but I have to say, like, I loved Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, which most people didn't see,
with
much
Margot
less
Robbie,
like. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, Tina Fey in This Is When I Leave You and Admission... And even kind of in Sisters, she's not killing it, and Baby Mama. She's not killing it as an actress for me.
Yeah, if she hasn't written it, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's something about that. But you know, I did love WTF, so go figure.
Yeah, what's your problem?
No, it's not. I don't think it's my problem. I think it's hers. We do share a birthday, though.
Fighting with My Family.
Yes.
This is the story of Soraya Knight.
Yes, she's a.k.a.
Paige. She is a real WWE wrestler. She's still in her mid-20s.
Hmm.
And she's British, and this is this is her origin story.
Basically, yeah.
And it's a true story. She and her brother auditioned to be in the WWE.
They come from like a family of wrestlers.
A family of...
of shabby, you know.
What I love, I'm just skipping ahead a little bit. You see the real family at the end of the movie.
Mm.
And there's movie trashy family, and then there's real life trashy family. And I watched the movie thinking, this is movie trashy family.
Yeah, because, I mean, the mom is Lena Headey, for gosh sakes.
Oh, God.
I come from actual trashy family, so I know. And when they show the real family at the end over the credits, I thought, that's right. That's actual trashy family right there.
They almost achieved actual trashy family in The Fighter. That's what I remembered.
Yes. Yeah, sure.
That was the one achievement of that film, yeah. I thought.
But this is the story about she and her brother auditioned for the WWE. They pick her and not him.
Right.
And it causes a bit of a
rift.
A rift in the family where they're all supportive of her. And he is, you know, on the surface, but he's still sort of like, why not me? Why not me? Why not me? And
then meanwhile, she's having to like go to Orlando by herself where she feels outclassed and you know, all the other women there are sort of like
former models and
cheerleaders. And they're like tall and blonde. And she's, you know, short and brunette and scrappy. She's played by Florence Pugh from Lady Macbeth.
God, I love her. Yeah.
You need to see this movie. She's dynamite.
This movie is... It's from Stephen Merchant. He wrote it and he directed it.
Yeah.
It is so adorable and so kind-hearted and so sweet.
Yeah.
And so much about that kind of family that sticks together no matter what. Like, it's not fakey. It feels real. Like, they are all super into each other as people and as a family group. And, like, no one feels... like an outsider, everyone feels valued. Everyone feels like their contribution matters to the family. And it will make you envious of them as a family where you think, you know, maybe it would have been okay to grow up like kind of a carny. if everyone was nice.
Sure.
Because everyone's nice.
Yeah, no, it's a sweet movie. Like, it gives you the sports movie stuff that you want. You know, there's like the big match at the end.
Right.
Although I have to admit, the big match confused me a bit because they go out of their way to explain about how wrestling isn't fixed, but it is scripted.
Correct.
You know, and so then when they get to the big match at the end, it's like, well, wait, is she really winning this, or is it just scripted? Like, what's even happening here?
Is she familiar with the beats already?
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Did she get her sides?
Florence Pugh, by the way, is going to be in the Little Women with the Greta Gerwig one.
Oh,
right?
Nice. Okay. Mm-hmm. That cool. Good.
Lady Macbeth, just one of the great performances the past couple of years.
And her brother is played by Jack Loudon, who was in Mary Queen of Scots and 71. He's popping up in a lot of stuff, and he's
one of those young guys who is unrecognizable from film to film,
yeah.
Because he played Morrissey in England Is Mine, the Morrissey biopic. And when I saw him here, I thought, wait, that's the same. It's not the same person. It is the same person.
You know, he's one of the faces in Dunkirk. Like, that's kind of how I think of anybody who was in that movie. Yeah.
I can think of that composite face. Yes.
It's still in theaters. It's been out for a couple of weeks. Uh-huh. You were gone out of town. So
yeah, but
we're a couple of weeks late on this one. But
it opened like New York, LA, and it's been expanding since then.
It's funny when it needs to be. It's dramatic when it needs to be.
There is apparently a documentary about the actual family that several people I know who follow WWE stuff have recommended to me. I've not watched it yet, but
I did not hate Vince Vaughn in this movie.
No, he's
someone's part. I don't know if it's Vince Vaughn doing this for himself, or if Stephen Merchant has figured out the magic way to make Vince Vaughn seem like not the biggest a-hole on the planet, on or off camera.
And for a movie that is produced by the WWE and even has, like, you know, a couple of scenes with The Rock in it, it doesn't entirely feel like an ad for the WWE.
Right.
Like, it actually acknowledges that
it
doesn't work out for everybody. And some people wind up having kind of terrible lives by trying to pursue this dream of fame that they can't get to. And, like, it doesn't completely let that off the hook. It, you know, it's not like all sunshine and rainbows. So, yeah, it's a lot more complex and a lot more charming than you might imagine.
Next up, I want the Joey Ryan biopic.
Oh.
I don't know who that is.
He's that crazy wrestler guy who, I guess there's sort of like an indie circuit of wrestling at this
point. Well,
there's
non-WWE.
Yeah.
There's other,
so he's on it. And he has inhabited the persona of sleazy 70s guy.
Oh.
And
Disco Stew.
Yeah. So he's like, he's super good looking, but his signature move is dong style. His entire career is a dick joke.
Okay.
And when he wrestles, he gets he wins the matches by magnetically forcing the other person wrestling him to grab onto the bulge in his shorts and succumb to it.
The optics on this are perfect, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely ready for America.
And so the guy's like withering under the power of the dong. It's I follow him on Instagram.
I'm sure you do.
Hilariously funny what he does. And he said on Twitter or Instagram, one of the two, he's like, 12 and 13-year-old boys really dig.
I'm sure.
Really dig my act. He's like, because that's the dick jokes, that's the time when they're the funniest.
Oh, yeah. No, it's golden. Yeah.
And so, he's the next, in my estimation, he's the next superstar.
Okay.
Of whatever it is they're doing out there in wrestling. I don't really follow it. But
Let's talk about Greta.
Yes, let's.
Yes.
Lewis, you want to give us a plot summary?
Yes. So it's mainly just Chloe Grace Moretz and Isabelle Huppert. Chloe Grace Moretz befriends a woman because she finds a purse on the subway and then returns the purse to the woman whose name is on it. And then it turns out the woman may have more to hide than we realize. And it also may turn out the woman is Isabelle Huppert, so you should have understood that she was a sinister woman with many layers right from the start, Chloe. If you saw the trailer for this movie, I would say it's a pretty spectacular trailer. It gets you really into the intrigue of it quickly, mm-hmm. and then I would say the movie is nothing more than that.
Correct.
It's a movie that wants to be, this is the movie that came to mind, Disturbia, where like you want to find the secret things out about the guy and you want them to be like really scandalous and amazing, but it just turns out to be the same shit that all these psychos have in common, you know?
Sir, this is a clean podcast. I do.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. I'll trim later. I was actually, it's funny that you mentioned Scandalous because I was thinking about Notes on a Scandal.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
In terms of like, you know, older lady gets creepily obsessed with younger lady. Yeah, I mean, this is basically a stalker movie, but you're being stalked by Isabelle Huppert. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, you win. Yeah.
Yeah. There's not really a lot we can say about what happens
yes.
because the fun of
is in the unfolding
is in where it goes. But when it was over, I turned to Alonzo and I said, "Well, it's all Chloe Grace Moretz's fault because she didn't want to be Isabelle Huppert's friend."
Yeah, right.
You get what you get if you reject the advances of Isabelle Huppert. You wish she would stalk you in actual life.
Ask her about Depardieu in the 70s.
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. Anything. Like, I couldn't really get in with the, we should be terrified of this woman, because I just kept thinking, well, I'll be your friend. we'll go someplace every day.
I think also she's revealed to be, there's some skepticism about how crazy she actually is early on, and then she's revealed to be just a psycho about a quarter of the way into the movie, and then from then on there's no suspense anymore because it's just crazy person versus normal girl who will inevitably, you know, we assume will win.
Even when we discover that she is a psycho, Chloe Grace Moretz's character is so boring.
Yes, right.
that you think, well, you know, if you, I was about to say, if you get blah, 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 which is a thing that does happen to her in the film, but I'm not going to say what it is. But if you wind up in the place where you wind up and you stay there forever, I don't actually care.
Yeah.
I just want to see more of this Greta character in another movie. Like, I want her to become the Jason Voorhees.
Oh, yeah, like Tom Ripley or whatever.
French stalker ladies, you cannot kill her. She's just going to keep going.
Like the stepfather.
She's going to leave purse after purse after purse all over the globe. Like the next one, she goes to a different town, does it all over again with who? With, I don't know who, but it doesn't matter. Maybe someone who's being directed to a performance better than
Neil Jordan.
Neil Jordan, not Stephen Wright. Neil Jordan.
By the way, that was kind of a trip to me, realizing it was Neil Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the thing about Neil Jordan is, like, you know, this movie has artfulness alongside its sort of sleazy genre trappings, but he's never been above sleazy genre trappings. I mean,
right.
You know, The Company of Wolves, for all of its sort of, like, you know, psychosexual reinterpretation of you know, Little Red Riding Hood, is a werewolf movie, you know, and he did Interview with the Vampire, and he did some other vampire movie a couple years ago that I hated. Was it Odeon or something?
Right, yes.
You know, so, like, it's not like he's above this sort of thing in any way. My ultimate take was, I thought about A Quiet Place last year, which is a movie that was thrilling while I was watching it, and then the moment it was over and I started asking questions about it, it all just unraveled.
Yeah.
And it's the same with this one. Like, you think about Greta for a second, and it doesn't make a lick of sense. But while you're in it, I had a good time watching.
There is a rad, I assume purposeful, throwback to Isabelle Huppert's career in it, though. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
Anyway, she has a certain object in her home that she.
Oh, yes. Yes. There's a career choice there involved, for sure.
Yes. It's cute.
I had a really good time. It is not a good movie, but I had a really good time watching Greta.
Yeah, it is entertainingly lurid.
And her apartment. And I'm not talking about Chloe Grace Moretz's apartment,
the Tribeca loft.
That boring loft. I'm talking about Isabelle Huppert's little hobbit home that she has tucked in a courtyard, and there's just lots of shade and just beautiful, like, old details in the apartment, and I just thought,
yeah, she's got some shelves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just built-in shelving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Plenty of tchotchkes.
A secret room. I don't want to give too much away, but, like, it's, you know, real estate. It's good for that, too.
And we've got another good round of, like, junket interviews from her, because she is such a specific press presence who's like not here for almost any question and repeats the same kind of mantra again and again, just like, this isn't hard for me. That's it. And you believe her, it's not smug or anything. It's just what this bizarre and brilliant person does.
And she's clearly having a gas.
Yes, right.
Doing
right.
this thing.
Well, she does a little dance at one point that is yeah. quite memorable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I think of my favorite thing she's ever done has been the interview where they asked her about what's her favorite thing to eat in
the best.
In a movie.
Oh, yeah,
and
right.
She says, nothing. No drinks. No snacks. No popcorn. Cinema. She's like,
yes.
You're a goddess.
You like cheese sticks, so.
Listen, if I'm at the AMC, we were there this morning watching Dragon Park, whatever. It was 10 a.m. and I thought, I could eat the mozzarella sticks right now from the AMC concession stand. Much like Greta, they are not good, yet also they are delicious. but I did not because it was early in the morning and I thought, I'm just not going to do that
Cinema.
Today. I'm not going to do that today. What, I'm going to wait until I go to the Met in HD on Wednesday afternoon.
Ah, there you go.
Then I'll get the mozzarella sticks, the grape soda, and enjoy some opera.
I haven't drank soda since I was in college, but man, I love grape soda. Was my jam.
Grape soda
that
is
and Dr.
the jam.
Pepper. Yeah.
Grape soda is the very best soda. Dr. Pepper is also top five.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I allow myself a soda per week. If I remember to do it, like I give myself, because that's what Gwyneth Paltrow allows her children.
Oh,
one
really?
Soda, one soda per week. Yeah, they get
I'm
a week,
somewhat surprised.
They get a weekly soda.
Yeah,
she's not a monster. I think
that's a whole other episode to debate her monstrousness.
There's also a Gwyneth book on this table beneath your microphone.
Yeah, there is. There's a, her. It's all no. It's
the first two cookbooks are
My Father's Daughter. Which is the first cookbook that she ever released. Chef Julia Tertian used to be in her employ and wrote those books.
Mm.
They're good cookbooks.
Yeah.
Because it's, I mean, you know, because Julia Tertian is a good cook.
And Gwyneth Paltrow is a perfect person.
And, so. Yeah. More or less. Yeah. So anyway, she lets her kids have a soda per week, and that's what I allow.
Hopping back to the Oscars real quick, did you see the interview with Gwyneth Paltrow where she didn't know what The Favorite was?
Yes, yes. Brilliant, of course.
It's like,
what
oh.
is that? Like, just like the guilelessness of, what is that?
Yeah.
Just, it's
I
me,
know
Gwyneth,
I'm supposed
I'm free to,
know. To
not know. Yeah.
That's who's
by
voting.
By the way, she's like 39.
And that's who's voting for the Oscars, people.
Yeah.
You've
got
Dragon. We can talk about
How to Train Your Dragon.
The Hidden World.
The Hidden World. This is not a review.
Yes, we cannot review this movie because we are old friends with the writer-director, Dean DeBlois.
Is Timac in it? And Vanity? Not that dragon. Okay,
oh, not
ahead.
A different yes, yeah. Yeah. Not Barry Gordy's How to yeah. Train Your Dragon. this is the third of the How to Train Your Dragon movies. He co-directed the first one and has written and directed the second and third one on his own. And, you know, my general rule for movies that made by people that I know is if I don't like it, I won't talk about it.
Mm.
So the fact that we're talking about it should tell you it's great. It's gorgeous.
The second one was so good.
These three films taken together. In fact, his entire body of work.
Yeah, this and Stitch. Lilo and Stitch. Yeah.
Dude does not disappoint me ever. I mean, I would say I wish I'd never met him so I could just give great reviews to these films and say these are great and there's no conflict of interest. But if that's impossible because tiny bear planet. But, yes. You know, the but these are taken as a trio of films now. They're so wonderful.
Yes.
And so smart in ways that so much other corporate animation is not.
True.
And this counts as corporate animation.
Sure.
Because
DreamWorks made them all.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that corporate animation is itself a bad thing. I'm just saying this is the big leagues of animation. But lately, so much of corporate animation has become numbing.
Mm.
I can't. I send you off to see everything first now. I don't wait. I don't go without your say-so anymore because I'm not going to watch another Angry Birds movie that's coming out this year. I'm not going to watch. We saw
the trailer for that.
Brave. I'm not
going to watch.
This
I'm not going to watch Wonder Park. You know, unless someone tells me otherwise.
Right.
Unless you come back and say, Wonder Park is one of the best animated films I've seen in the past couple of years. I might go then.
Well, also, by the way, there's enough people who are obsessed with this stuff that it will get back to if it's good. Like, I wouldn't have seen the Spider-Verse movie had I not been, like, prompted rightfully to see it.
Yeah,
you know?
I made you go see Spider-Verse first because I'm saturated with superheroes. And so I want a person who I trust to tell me something's worth seeing. I'm on the fence about Ugly Dolls. I love Kelly Clarkson.
Yes.
Who doesn't? But
and Janelle Monáe is in there too.
I love Janelle Monáe. You know, I saw the trailer for Ugly Dolls today.
By the way, the villain is a boy named Lewis.
Oh, Lewis is such an underused, sinister name. I wish it Lewis. Yeah.
I saw the trailer for Ugly Dolls today, and it appears to be about self-esteem. And I am not interested in anyone's self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Especially not children. Children need to earn their own self-esteem. And
no, it's true, though. So many...
I love this George Carlin that you've yes. rolled into.
But so many of these corporate animated films are about, like, believe in yourself and, you know, like... choose your own destiny or whatever, like, which is not these are not inherently bad messages, but I don't need to see it over and over and over again, you know.
Right.
Did you see Littlefoot?
No.
Yeah, you know, it's like, again, it's just the same old thing over and over again.
So what makes these films different is that they are concerned with entire other matters. They are concerned with compassion and empathy and community and
the environment.
They're concerned with
empathy,
peace as an active practice rather than, you know,
a passive
default, you know, the default setting of war in all of these movies that are aimed at children. Let's never forget, these are films that are aimed at children, and most of them end with wars. We have to fight the bad person. We have to, like, shoot them with things and stuff. In the dragon films, what happens is sometimes you have to fight because there is, you know,
there are bad people.
An unstoppable force coming at you that you better stop or they're going to
destroy your way of
destroy
living.
Everything. But all other options are explored, including hiding, which is my favorite narrative element of this movie. The whole point of the title is, what if we just go hide? That way the bad people won't find us anymore.
Who's like the stunt new voice in this? Is Cate Blanchett still in it or no?
Cate Blanchett is back.
Is there a stunt?
I don't know if there's a... Oh, the new voice. Is that F. Murray Abraham is the bad guy?
Yes.
Oh, that's what I wanted to hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Damn it. Again.
So, listen, don't feel bad. Every guest we have swears at least once. Manola Dargis cannot stop herself.
Really?
And we have to bleep the hell out of that woman every time she's here.
You're in good company.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it.
But yeah, so I mean, and I have to say, like, I got a little verklempt in the last 5 or 10 minutes of this one.
This is about a character named Grimmel F. Murray Abraham, who is a lifelong dragon killer, and there's one Night Fury dragon that he has to kill, and that's Toothless.
Toothless. Well, as it turns out, there are two left.
Yeah.
One that had been captured, you know, who's a female, is a white one that they call the Bright Fury.
Bright Fury or the Light Fury?
Bright Fury, I thought. And then and Grimmel uses her as bait to try and destroy both of them because he's killed all the other Night Furies.
Right.
Meanwhile, Burke, the village, has become overrun with all of the sort of rescue dragons that they've taken in, and so they have to sort of figure out another place to go, and that's why,
because they're being tracked by this Grimmel person.
Well, that, but also just because, like, there's just not enough room, you know.
So to speak.
That, but also that there's just an actual, like, overpopulation happening.
Okay, yeah.
And so that's why Hiccup is originally compelled to go
Listen, you just build up. High density living is easy.
They can fly. I could have
figured that out for
him. Anyway, he starts going through his father's old maps. So we get dead Gerard Butler like voiceover flashbacks right. in this one, and trying to who said that sailors spoke of, you know, this hidden world where the dragons actually came from in the first place, and where if we could send them back there and sort of seal it off, then, you know, like they could be happy in their world and we could be happy in ours. And and so, yeah, so Hiccup's trying to figure out, like, can he take them there? Maybe they should all go there because, you know, everyone's chasing them down all the time. Yeah, it's just, you know, and I think that they collaborated again with awesome cinematographer who...
Not Deakins.
Yes.
Oh, it is?
Yes,
oh,
Roger okay. Deakins, who consulted on 2, and I think he came in again for 3. So, like, the lighting when they see the sort of what this other world looks like is just stunning.
The actual hidden world that they go to is some of the most beautiful visual stuff that I've seen in a mainstream animated film in a long, long time. Also, it is coupled with a very... I will use this word forever until it becomes more commonplace. A daring use of silence. There is so little quiet in so many movies, especially animated films from mainstream. You know,
always music. There's studios. Always people yelling. You know,
there are more than a few, at least 2 or 3 or 4 sequences in this film that are quiet as the dragons get to know each other. As they fly together,
oh God,
as they enter the hidden world.
The courtship between the Night Furies is gorgeous.
Yeah, there's so much beauty in this film that, again, this is a review. It's really good. It's
also,
really
good. I would compare those movies to Toy Story, and that animation is a particularly... lyrical choice for how to express these characters, because dragons and toys are like there's just a magic quality inherent to those things apart from like animals or apart from, you know, actual things that exist or that behave that way. So I just, it's so lovely to watch. It feels like a dream or something. Yeah.
Not counting Pixar, which is kind of its own lane. Lately to me, you can really divide up the world into everything that was influenced by Miyazaki and everything that's been influenced by the Ice Age movies.
Thankfully.
And Dean is a Miyazaki fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's clear. No question. That's clear. So, yeah. Go see this. Don't go see that. Like, go see this one. If you've never seen any of them, start with the first one.
Yeah.
Take your time. They're gorgeous, and they're sweet, and they're funny, and they're smart, and they're beautiful, and they are worthy of the time and the effort that was poured into them.
And we didn't see this in 3D, but I've seen previous ones in 3D.
Yes.
And he really puts a lot of effort into making those look great. The flying sequences are really just kind of ethereal, and they really pop in 3D. So if you're somebody who is on the fence and, you know, you don't mind 3D... you know, it's probably worth the investment.
I'm sure you're right. If 3D could give you diabetes, I'd be dead by now, and I'm done with diet. I'm done with 3D. It's you know, unless someone brings the French line back to the Egyptian, so we can watch Jane Russell do her dance.
Yes, that's an amazing movie.
You ever seen that one?
No, I mean, okay. I'm familiar with Jane Russell as a species.
The poster for this film, and I'm not making this up. The poster of this film says, "She'll knock both your eyes out."
Love it.
Yeah.
That's and here they are, Jane Mansfield.
Exactly. Yes. This was like her going back to RKO after Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, and they tried to come up with like a similar vehicle. So like most of it is set on a boat. But yeah, there is this big number that she does at the end. And here's the crazy thing. It is like so sexy and bananas, but like in the 3D camera is all up in it, and apparently the sensors flipped out about it. And so if you watch the movie like on TV now, or if you see it in 2D, the whole thing is shot from like the other side of the room. Like all you get to see is like the master shot. It's only if you can see a 3D print that you get to see the way it was originally intended to look.
Incredible.
Yeah. So we saw it at like, they do these 3D festivals at the Egyptian periodically. They haven't, I don't know if they've done it lately, but, yeah. But yeah, if you can ever see the French Line in 3D, run, don't walk.
All right.
And speaking of which, I didn't get to see Apollo 11 in IMAX, but I would totally see it again in IMAX because I bet it looks amazing.
You saw Apollo 11. I have not yet seen Apollo 11. I need to know one thing before I go.
What's that?
How motion sick will I become? Because I had to close my eyes through a good chunk of First Man.
Yeah, it's...
God, what a stressful movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, this, I mean, after, as I mentioned to you when you asked me this before, this is all footage that was shot in the late 1960s, so it is not...
Right, but you're talking about me.
I know.
And I get motion sick getting up from the table.
Well, there are people that are in a spacecraft that is moving. Okay, so yes, well, there is
that's
that.
That's problematic.
But it's not a lot of. But it's not. But none of it is POV, and none of it is shaky. And you know, it is. It is fairly staid, I would say, in terms of like what the shots are like. But it is.
All right, talk about it.
It is gorgeous. So this is a documentary about the first moon landing. And you incorporating apparently a lot of never before seen and never before restored footage. And so it takes you behind the scenes of like the rockets being built, the launch itself. You're like, you're in mission control, but you also see people like clustered outside of a motel somewhere in Cape Canaveral watching this happen, you know, or like the dignitaries in the stands with the ladies with sunglasses and the like weird flowery, you know, hats drinking, you know, those old school Coca-Cola cans with the diamonds on the side, you know. And then you're, you know, there's no narration. There's some like animated bits sort of showing how, okay, the capsule has to go around the Earth a few times to sort of pick up the momentum to then slingshot out, you know, out of orbit and toward the moon and all that stuff. But it just kind of takes you through the whole thing and the different teams in mission control. And I really want like men's fashion to go back to that place of like the crew cut and the yellow turtleneck. You know?
Oh yeah. The end of Mad Men. Yes.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
Yes. Totally. Anyway, it's just, you know, it's almost like a procedural because it is literally like this happened and this is how it happened and this is why it happened. And these were all the steps taken to get to this place. And these were the people on the ground who had to make these calculations and do all this stuff. And meanwhile, they're in this thing and like, you know, how, you know, I was always sort of fuzzy about like the actual landing part and how then that thing gets off of the moon and back to Earth. Mm-hmm. And they illustrate all that stuff. And, you know, it's this thing where like it comes down to like, we have 2 seconds left before this thing has to happen. And then it happens, you know. And so even though you obviously know that it all worked out, it's very suspenseful a lot of times because it's just everything is. It made me really fully appreciate the Neil Armstrong as portrayed by Ryan Gosling in First Man, because there's so many calculations at every second of this thing that have to be perfect. No wonder they had to send somebody up who had zero personality and like all computational skills, you know.
I'm always blown away by a documentary that is full of quote-unquote never-before-seen footage. Like, what? We just had this?
I know.
It's like that Jane documentary at Goodall. It's like, we just had this.
Yeah, it was under somebody's bed.
It's 2018, and now we're watching it.
Yeah, I don't know what the backstory is. I don't know why NASA was sitting on a lot of this stuff, but it's fascinating. So I highly, highly recommend it. And if you can see it in IMAX, you should. But even if you don't, it's still an impressive feat and a breathtaking movie.
You're going to be going out of town next week.
Yes.
And I think I found the film I'm going to watch. This is officially, I guess, my DVD pick of the week.
Okay.
Even though I haven't seen it yet.
Oh.
Yeah. Grasshopper. If a film distributor could be my other boyfriend after Jose Andres and after the husband, listen, I'm polyamorous. If a film distributor could be my boyfriend, Grasshopper would be it.
Like, ooh, don't tell Cinema Guild.
I'm sorry, Cinema Guild. I still love you too. Listen, I'm torn. But you know what Grasshopper has?
What?
Grasshopper, you can stream things right off their site.
Oh.
Cinema Guild doesn't do that.
Like you pay and...
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you can stream now on their site the 2014 film from Lav Diaz called From What Is Before.
How long?
Which I have not seen yet. I've seen, you know, the last few Lav Diaz films, but I haven't seen this one.
How long is it?
It's kind of long.
How long?
It's 338 minutes. Uh-huh. Is that a problem for anybody? That's See, 5.5 hours.
Now, here's the thing. If I weren't leaving town this weekend, I would go out to the Arrow to see the 7-hour Sergei Bondarchuk War and Peace that just got restored.
That's too long to sit in a chair at the Arrow.
Those are not the best seats in the world, admittedly, but I think I would...
It's been a long time since I was there.
I would Iron Man it out.
I love the Arrow, and I'll go see a normal length film there, but I can't sit there 7 hours.
Well, I think Criterion's going to be putting it out later in the year so we can watch it in the comfort of our home.
Great.
Perhaps in... You know,
chunks.
Exactly.
Yes. No, I'm not going to sit all 5.5 hours with this one. I'm going to watch it in a little bit of
okay,
chunks.
Fine. So tell it once again. The title is
From What Is Before.
From What Is Before.
Okay. Very excited. I love Lav Diaz.
My DVD pick, actually, there is a, speaking of Criterion, they released another documentary about the moon programs. It kind of compiles all of the Apollo moon shots together into sort of one glorious narrative, and it's called For All Mankind, which is actually the very first film that I ever saw at the USA Film Festival Dallas, where I later
really?
Became artistic director. But yeah, it was their opening night film in 1989. It was the first movie that I went to at that festival, and it's really... exciting. And again, they sort of take all these different moon shots and edit them together, not chronologically, but it's sort of like all the launches and all the travels too, and all the landings and all the travels back and all the splashdowns, you know. But it really gives you this sense of the feat of technical mastery and computational skills and all the other things that it took to get us to the moon and back. And so I think it's really, it's a great movie. We didn't ask you beforehand, but do you have a DVD pick you want to spring up?
I just looked up one and I made sure it was on DVD.
Hooray.
And it is. Okay. Not an A+ movie, but I would give it an A-. Did you guys like At Eternity's Gate?
Yeah, I respectfully admired it.
I would say he was the best of the nominees in that category.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Willem Dafoe.
Since
plays
they left
Vince
out
Vengo.
They left out Ethan Hawke. So.
I would have voted for Ethan Hawke. Yes. Yeah, he plays Vincent Van Gogh. Oscar Isaac.
Great
attempts
in a movie that
to
was
play.
Sort of,
yeah,
to
attempts to play Paul Gauguin.
Oh, Gauguin, you're on.
Yes,
yes.
And Teo is played by Rupert Friend, who's like 26 years younger than Willem Dafoe.
Well, Willem Dafoe is like several decades older than Van Gogh was, and he died. So,
yes.
You know.
But right. It's a movie where I can't explain it. Just I'm always into biopics of like misunderstood geniuses. Just it's catnip for me, whatever. And in this movie, obviously Vincent Van Gogh has several breakdowns. And the breakdowns to me felt, I don't know how else to put this, real and not overacted and kind of like somebody actively trying to navigate an emotional experience as opposed to illustrating madness for a camera. That's how I felt. So I thought it was, for a movie that I don't know any of my own friends had seen, and certainly hasn't been discussed, I thought it was like pretty great to look at. And there's a scene when he yells at kids who ruin his easel, and yes. It is really satisfying.
That is actually my favorite moment.
Have you by chance seen the Robert Altman Vincent and Teo?
No.
Check it out if you get a chance. Tim Roth plays Van Gogh in that one. He's quite good.
Lust for Life, way too long.
Yeah.
Julian Schnabel, I think, careens around in terms of his quality, but Willem Dafoe's performance in this film is really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the one undeniable thing you can take away from it, no question.
I have listener thanks to give.
Oh!
Here are my thanks to listeners. Dustin, thank you for more of those beautiful LK mailing labels that you keep making and sending to us. What a godsend you are.
I hope you're doing that at work. Printer ink is expensive.
Yeah, I hope you're not paying for these. I hope you're, you know, ruining your day's productivity and stealing from your employer by doing this. Here's what's great about Dustin. In addition to sending us these great mailing labels that allow me never to have to write our return address on another package again, he always manages to send me at least one death metal CD of a band I've never heard of before, and I've heard of a lot of them. And so this is Glutton for Punishment. I haven't listened to it yet because the CD player in the car just gave up the ghost, but we have this nice one right here on the table that I'll be using while I wash dishes and listening to Glutton for Punishment.
Great. Is this a new album or no?
I have to look. I think it might be a couple years old.
I'm going
to
say, I'm just fascinated by metal bands still being interested in fonts with fangs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yes. That's still...
The classics never die.
Yeah. They do not. Thank you to Miriam for those flabbergasting tea towels.
Oh, yes.
That she had made... just for us.
Yes. Featuring Sonia's Irv's illustrations.
Yeah. Like, Irv's Burgers, Sonia, when they were open, Sonia used to draw your face on a plate and on the paper plate and your name on it and say, this is just for you and your name and read a little, and draw other little pictures and stuff. So Miriam got Instagram photos of those plates and made a had a tea towel made.
Oh, that's adorable.
Two of them, matching. Yes. So that... warms my heart, and it's very difficult to do that. And so,
now we miss Sonia, but this is a nice,
lovely. Also, a box of stuff showed up from Jesse.
Yes,
chocolates, toffee, a DVD of Agnes Varda's Faces Places. And four thrift store cassettes. Reba McEntire, the Statler Brothers, Amy Grant, and Tracy Chapman.
Wow.
And Amy Grant's Heart in Motion, so it's, you know, Baby Baby and Every Heartbeat.
Baby Baby. Yeah.
I was just in a store and heard Baby Baby, and I feel guilty being so moved by a Christian singer. I mean, just, I've worked my whole life to go away from that, and yet, Mrs. Gill killed it.
Where are the did you eat all the chocolates and the toffees while I was out of town?
I saved them for you.
Oh, okay.
They're on the counter. They're right
okay.
over there.
Okay.
If you paid attention to anything that happened in this house, you'd
see there's
already.
A lot of things on that counter. This,
yeah, most of them are food. You should be looking at that. What's your problem?
Fine.
This is the man. I got to say this. This is the man that you can buy something super delicious at the store, right? Something sweet and wonderful. Or you can make something. I can make a cake. And it'll sit there on the counter, covered, still good to eat. Or in the box if it's like... and everything except Oreos, which you will demolish in one sitting. But like anything else... it'll just sit on the counter, tempting anyone who walks by, but not him.
I will.
4 days later, untouched. I'm like, are you ever going to eat this?
You are.
Because
okay.
If you don't, I will. And then I will choke the life out of you.
You are exaggerating, because I will usually devour a thing immediately, but then save some for the next time I have a sweets craving.
Oh, my God.
And that's what makes you crazy.
It makes me insane.
Because I can save it until I really need it.
Well, how? How do you do it?
Because
I don't know how
because
you
I
do
worry
this.
That if I have it now and then later we have a sweets craving, there's gonna be nothing in the house.
No, no, no. There's gonna be nothing in the house because you're gonna not eat it, and I'm going to. That's what's gonna happen.
You don't eat my thing. Behave.
Most of my personality is defined by the fact that I only have savory cravings. My entire life is devoted. Like what most people feel towards cookies, I truly. Feel towards Chex Mix.
Wow.
I don't know why this has happened to me. Why this is a vocation for
you
me.
Need a salt and vinegar chip and
yes.
You're good to go.
If I were a drag queen, I'd be named Salt and Vinegar. Yes.
you're Margie Rocklin.
Yes, that's true. She's
the same way.
Oh yeah.
She does not care for sweets
Margie
at all.
Will take I'll make a dessert and Margie will come over and then she will take a bite of it just to see what it tastes like. And then that's it. And that's yeah, she does not care for sugar.
No.
I have no idea what that. I have no idea what that life is.
Yeah,
like.
I can't. But my head doesn't go there. But
yeah. So where are we going with this? I have no idea.
You were thanking people,
thanking
and
Jesse
of course, we also want to thank all of our wonderful Patreon subscribers. And if you aren't one yet, you should go to patreon.com/linoleumknife and check out.
Read all the things you can get because we're not going to bother you with
yes,
it right now.
But we have extra digital content and we have
prizes.
Fun prizes and hangout opportunities and other things. So right. patreon.com/linoleumknife.
This month, what's the LK club meeting? This
we
month?
Are going to watch Strangers on a Train on Netflix
on Saturday the 16th.
Yes,
6 p.m. Pacific time.
The other Alfred Hitchcock crypto gay movie starring Farley Granger.
Yes, right. I can't actually decide which order I would put them in.
In terms of quality or gayness?
Both.
Quality, I think Strangers on a Train has it down. Gayness, yes. It's a toss-up.
Yeah, people, rope is better for men tugging at their collars and gulping, like the like the white guy in the Sir Mix-a-Lot video. Yeah. Yeah.
A direct cultural connection, yeah. For sure. Lewis, tell people where they can find you online.
I unfortunately still live on Twitter at Lewis Fertel, and I'm going to keep going until I get it right.
If y'all are not following Lewis on Twitter, you're doing Twitter wrong. I've been saying for years that you know, some people's medium is charcoal and some people's is marble, and Lewis's is 280 characters.
Thank you.
Is that how many characters you're getting at?
That's right. Yeah. And I'm happy about it. I thought the whole medium had fallen peaked. Had shattered, and now it's a little bit better. Yeah.
And of course, check out his very funny podcast, Keep It, with Ira Madison III and Kara Brown.
Keep It is my favorite podcast to listen to for opinions that I want to yell at you guys. Like, I'll hear y'all talk about literally anything, and one of you is going to say something where I go, no, no. And then I keep listening.
Well, and it's
I love it so much.
Sometimes I disagree, and sometimes I'm like, God, I'm old, because I have no idea what they're talking about.
It's never all three at once. It's never all three of you at once saying something that I don't agree with. It's just always, one of you. Mm-hmm. And I'm always like, wrong, like Elaine Stritch in the Company thing. Wrong.
Oh my God, that Documentary Now episode. That's yes. I cannot wait to see that.
Oh, last night we showed a friend of ours original cast album Company, because he'd never seen it, and then we all watched the Documentary Now thing.
How was it?
Dead on.
Can't wait.
Yeah. Like, dead on to the point of everybody's flesh looking weird the way it does.
Oh yeah.
You know, and that sort of 16mm under fluorescent lighting kind of thing. Yeah, it's bang on. And apparently they're putting out an album of the fake songs.
Amazing.
Because they are pretty, as Sondheim parodies go, they're pretty dang funny. So anyway, we'll talk more about that on LKTV, which is a show that we do for our Patreon subscribers. So Lewis, bless your heart. Thank you for being here. You are one of our favorite guests.
And, we mean bless your heart in the nice way.
In the nice way, not in the passive aggressive Southern way.
Oh, no. Then I accept.
For yes. Reals. And thank you all for listening. Do check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com, where you can find, among other things, another podcast that I do called Breakfast All Day. Listen to Bibbs and Whitney's show. Cancel Too Soon and Critically Acclaimed. Go to the Schmoes Knows Network, and of course, Dennis Anion with Dennis Hensley, the Comics Canon, All Things Cozy, Sewers of Paris, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show for free on Apple Podcasts. Leave us that 5-star review. It does help greatly. You can also leave positive feedback in all the places that we stream, like Stitcher and thelounge.com and Spotify and whatnot. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music, bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. Follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Anything else, Dave?
No.
Alrighty then. Well, until next time.
Goodbye.